Good evening, family. My name is Mark Houston. I'm an alcoholic. In my sobriety date is October 19th of 1982, and I'm a member of the Clean Air Group in Dallas, Texas. And I used to be your height. That's one of many reasons I drank. I was too short. Yeah. Several people talk about, by the way, you did great the countdown. Talk about fear of speaking, and I have read psychologists talk about that's one of the major fears people have. And I don't know who wrote that, but they are not an alcoholic. You know, does this create a little angst sometimes? Yeah, this has not been my greatest fear. When I was drinking, my greatest fear was there would not be alcohol. And when I got sober and really started to wake up, my greatest fear was I would lose conscious contact with God. And so it's so interesting when you read. I was thinking too the announcement on the hearing impaired. Anybody know alcoholic that's not hearing impaired? Employer says, you know, you really need to quit drinking. You might lose your job, huh? Judge says you might need to quit drinking. You're going to go to jail because of alcohol, huh? Family says you ought to really quit drinking or I'm going to leave, huh? You know, it's just, I've been hearing impaired most of my life. And getting sober did not change that. It's good to be at a meeting. I had taken a 3-year sabbatical from speaking, which I'm very, very grateful for. They don't rotate you out when you're a speaker, and I think that can be a deadly trap. And so it's going to be interesting seeing what happens when that power goes through me tonight. Because I never stop working the steps and stop living this conscious contact with this power greater than myself. I love this program. I'm grateful to be sober. I normally also, my experiences over time, what I have to say has been shaped by my current experience. I do not live off the food I ate 2 weeks ago, nor can I live off the memory of an old experience with God, the steps, the power, or you. You know, am I current? Where am I? Last year, year and a half, a lot of death in my life. And unfortunately, most of that was the alcoholic death, drinking themselves to death. The first man who really carried this message to me, well known in Texas, passed away a little over a year ago, Don Pritz. A lot of you know Don. And I sat across from him many times. He started doing the work with me out of the big book when I was 3 years sober, and he was one of the strongest male influences and mentors in my life. And those of you who know him, he's a man who is sorely missed. He gave a talk, and then he died the next day, which is how he would go out. You know, fabulous man. And I went to his memorial, and there were 1,000 people there. Another one of my mentors passed away, a guy in Denver called Big Frank. Don died with about 39 years sober. Big Frank had 39 years sober. Scariest guy I ever met in AA, about 6'8". Biggest head on a man I've ever seen in my life. Huge hands. Ex-sheep herder turned attorney. See, I you know, God puts a lot of different kind of influences in your life, but, you know, I'm the kind of guy, you know, I got broad shoulders and a big ass, and you better be coming straight at me. And boy, he did, and Don did. And they knew me. They could read me. You know, those people been around for a while and they got power in your life. Boy, they can read you. And thank God I had men like that in my life who could read me like that. And they were great influences on me. So my dad died of alcoholism. Did he influence me? Yes, but in a little bit different way than they did. And I am so grateful to them for what they passed on to me. And the remainder of the deaths were the alcoholic variety, where they drank themselves to death. Some wonderful men. And some of them had really done some work with the steps. 7 years, picked up a drink, drank himself to death in a month. Those of you who got a little time can probably relate to this. You're going to the meetings, but you don't like your home group anymore, and your mind's judgmental about what's being said, and you got a lot of answers. Pretty soon you don't fit anywhere, and then you feel separated. See, I don't know about you, I don't know how you drink, but you separate me long enough from you, this fellowship, and my higher power, I'm going to go back to something that made me feel connected, and that's called alcohol. And his 21-year-old son found him. Went to that funeral. 6 weeks ago, my ex-wife took a shotgun and blew her head off to end her suffering. 5 other deaths, alcohol-related. 1 man, 17 years, circuit speaker at one time. Got a little too enthralled, I think, with the sound of his own voice and stopped doing the inner work. See, my experience is, I'm a real alcoholic, and if I don't have a revolutionary spiritual experience and continue to grow in inner consciousness, I'm ill-equipped to deal with life, and ultimately I'm going to go back to something that's going to provide me with a sense of ease and comfort. And in my experience is, I don't care how long you're sober, you know, this doesn't go away. Went to a restaurant this afternoon. And I went to use the restroom. I'm coming back, and a guy is taking a long pull off a Corona. Now, I got sober in 1982. I don't recall Corona being around. And I just watched him, and I damn near ran into the wall watching him suck off that Corona. I mean, to this day, I love alcohol better than most people that drink it. And I don't think that's ever going to end, you see. So I'm going to spend a little bit of time sharing with you what I was like, touch on what happened, and I really want to talk about my current experience and really share with you because, we become a reflection of our lineage, our sponsorship lineage. If you look at this, everyone in this room is tied into Bill or Bob, are we not? And if you're around long enough and you really study the history, they're really two different lineages, even though they both work out of the same book. They really are different in terms of how they approach things. And you know, one of the things that Don did with me is every year he believed in reworking the first 9 steps and operating within the spiritual disciplines of steps 10, 11, and 12. So I don't know any different. That's what I do. Because we're all influenced by our influences. And I'm grateful. I'm very, very grateful I was shown that. I can't even imagine being up here tonight trying to live my life based on an inventory I did 5 years ago. 2 years ago. Because I'm a real alcoholic. It don't take much for me to get resentful. I do as much with the disciplines of 10 and 11 as anyone I know. And at the drop of a hat, I can cop a resentment. My big book says if I do, then I'm going to be blocked from a power. It's a power that gives me ease and comfort. If I stay blocked too long, what happens? I get diseased. It took me, I drank alcohol for 20 years. I picked up a drink when I was 16. I drank till I was 36. When I got sober, I had brain damage, kidney damage, liver damage. Everything I owned, you could put in a duffel bag. I didn't come in and out of AA. I mean, I loved alcohol. I could not imagine life without alcohol, and I was a daily drinker. Anything even hinted get between me and a drink, it was gone. You see, because now that I've been sober quite some time, and I can sit and look back at myself, the truth is, and by the way, this is not in the big book, this is my opinion. God made a mistake with drunks. They're up there and they're in a line, we're coming down, right? We weren't supposed to come down. Somebody turned their head for a minute and I came down. Unfortunately, I was not given some tools to deal with this thing. Life scares me. I was watching a movie, Sling Blade, not long ago, and he made a statement which spoke to me. At the very end of the movie, he's locked back up because he committed this little crime. And a guy that came up to him, he said, how was it out there? And he says, it's too big. I understand too big. See, people say to me, well, how do you do your job? I go, I don't know how I did what I did today, and the world wants me to do it tomorrow. Or people that I'm friends with, they want me to be friends with them tomorrow, but I don't know how I did it today. And you know, financial sanity and financial responsibility. I don't know how I did it today, but the world wants me to do it tomorrow. And the IRS wants to get paid taxes on time. And I don't know about the rest of you. This is just me. I'm ill-equipped to put all that together and make that happen on my own power. I needed a drink. When I took a drink, I wish I'd have taken one sooner. I'm ill-equipped. I literally, earliest memories, I walk into a room and I'm separated from everybody in the room. I don't know why I'm that way other than the theory I just gave you. It's the only thing that explains it. You know, I'm ill-equipped. Fear, terrified of everything and everybody. Did I have reason to? No, I was born and raised in Humboldt, Iowa. It's right out of a movie. I mean this. You didn't lock doors. Matter of fact, among other things, I'm a writer, and I'm working on a book called Being Watched Over. I mean, this town raised me, for God's sakes. You know, they'd get excited if you'd ride your bike at night without a light, for God's sakes. You know, I wasn't raised in some crazy, insane thing. But this fear I'm telling you about, I had it just like that from the very get-go. I never measured up. I would start all kinds of things, and a week later, I wasn't proficient, so I'd quit. You all relate to that? You know, if I've sponsored one man, I've sponsored 30 that quit college two quarters short of a degree. Why do we do that? I don't know. Bill Wilson, he studied, took the law school exam, never practiced one day. I understood that. Can't tell you how many times. I joined Amway 6 times. You're laughing because some of you have done something similar, haven't you? I have impaired hearing. Someone said, you've got to be kidding. No, I'm not kidding. I forgot the first presentation didn't work, so I went with the second. But I was small in high school. My dad was a drunk. Wasn't the drunk of the town, but he was a drunk. Small town, everybody knows everybody's business. And I was a Houston. My older brother was the first one in the history of Humboldt High School to get kicked out. Principal called me in and said, he ruined my record. You're not going to. You know, fading heat. And summer as a junior, I picked up a drink. Right from the get-go, the effect produced by alcohol, which, because I have a curious mind, I like to ask normies about the effect produced by alcohol when they drink. And if you ask them the kind of questions that I ask them, none of them experienced what I did. First time I read the Buddhist term nirvana, I knew exactly what they meant. Hot summer day back in Iowa when I was 16 years old, I could drink about a half a Pabst Blue Ribbon and I was experiencing nirvana. And I was at peace and I was a part of everybody and everything. And I could talk about the rest of the things, but when I talked to other people, alcohol did not do that for them. And alcohol did that for me. And alcohol did that for me for 20 years. In spite of almost drinking myself to death and in spite of all the consequences one suffers from the progressive chronic nature of alcoholism. It impacted my life immediately. I was very involved in a lot of things. In my senior year, I was involved in nothing. Right from the get-go, alcohol. And you know, there's that backward thinking around alcohol. I remember that summer, I'm driving a car, and I got three of my pals with me. We got a case of beer. And they each drink about 3 or 4, and they're puking. I drink all the rest, and I'm driving the car, and I want more. And I'm bragging about that, not realizing that the reason that was taking place is I have an abnormal body when it comes to alcohol. And that filter that other people have, that my mother had, for example, I don't have that filter. Now, I didn't know that. I didn't know that my body was abnormal, and I didn't know that when I took a drink, I broke out in a craving for more. And I didn't know that when I took the first drink, alcohol was going to decide where it took me. I think that's why our big book spends very little time talking to you and I about alcohol in our body. Why? Because if you drank like I drink, when I take a drink, the drink takes me. This idea that we choose what we do once we take a drink, I've always thought, that's cute. Stop the bar for 5 o'clock for a toddy and I'm going to be home, you know, at 8 and 2 o'clock they're kicking you out. But you chose to stay, you betcha. Get on a plane in Anchorage, Alaska. My grandmother died. I take a drink. I had 3 days to get from Alaska to Humboldt, Iowa. 6 days later, I wake up in a hotel in St. Louis, but I chose to do that, you betcha. live with a gal in Denver, Colorado. I go up to Bennigan's. I'm going to have a couple drinks. 3 days later, I wake up in Jacksonville, Wyoming, which is 800 miles away, but I chose to, you betcha. See, you start doing that stuff for a while, but if you think you're mentally stable, like I thought I was mentally stable, that leaves you with a very conflicted question. What is wrong with me? See, because that night I went up to Bennigan, and I planned on going back. That girl, I really liked that girl. We were living together, and I was going to go to the grocery store, and I had the best intentions, and I wanted to build a life with her, and she didn't understand it when I called her from Jacksonville, Wyoming, and I was with another woman. She just didn't get that. And a month later, you know, then I'm in remorse about something I had no control of but thought I had control. But that's the way that was. I moved around a lot. I had a great time in college. The problem was there was a little thing called Vietnam going on then, and because I liked to drink and I kept changing majors, that's the only way I could draw out college. So at 6 years without a degree, they drafted me and sent me to Vietnam for about 13 and a half months. Came back from there and finished up college and got married for the first time. And roared off to California with $150 and a Volkswagen and a new wife, just like old Bill on that whole Harley, you know. I was going to prove to the world, and I did. I went to work for a Fortune 500 company. And see if you can relate to this. You know, I'm a fear-based, alcoholic Iowa farm kid, and I'm living in San Francisco, work for Safeco Insurance Company as a claims adjuster, wearing suits and, you know, writing checks and dealing with these people, and I'm terrified all the time. Just, it's like, I think this is a standard theme song every drunk I've ever met. They're going to find out. Now, I don't know what they're going to find out, but they're going to find out. And so we stay angst all the time, and it doesn't matter how successful we get. We stay angst. So I did that for about 10 months, and then I made a few friends out there, and I switched companies, and I moved up to Oregon. And my alcoholism is progressing, and I began to combine other chemicals with the alcohol, but my deal was alcohol. The effect produced, not taste, you know, the effect produced, that was the deal. Nothing even touched it. Nothing could ever get close to it. Even back then, I still laugh about that. I was 20, probably 26, 27 years old, and I began to suffer anxiety attacks. Can you imagine? I remember going to hospital. I weighed like 180, 185 pounds and was running then. And, you know, resting pulse rate of like 45 and blood pressure went over. The doctor said, "My God, we'd like to be as healthy as you." He said, "I don't know what the problem is. There's nothing wrong with you physically." Okay. So he gave me some freeze-dried alcohol, Valium, and that helped a little. So, I'm in this problem because my illness is progressing and I'm also getting more successful in business. So this inner angst, this inner turmoil that I lived in from the time my eyes opened till the time I went to bed is getting worse and worse, and I got a drink to treat it. And then trying to match those two, the words in the big book are so beautiful. Mark presents a stage character to the world. And, you know, I begin to compromise myself. For me, when looking at me and alcohol, is I begin to morally compromise. I was raised with some good values, and all of them, right out the window. Cheating on my employer and cheating on my wife, it all went with my story. Walked out of that marriage in 1975, went up to Seattle, Washington, a couple of years there, went up to Anchorage, Alaska. And that was the beginning of the end. Left Anchorage, Alaska in 1978, got down to Denver, Colorado. And when I sobered up in 1982, I was working as an orderly in a nursing home, cleaning up human feces, writing the great Jack London story. You know? See, I don't ever want to take a drink again, and that ain't okay with me. It's not okay for me to take a drink again. It's not okay for another alcoholic I know to take a drink again. You know? I've worked in the field of chemical dependency a lot of years. They used to die in our rooms. Now there's a screen at treatment centers, hospitals between. They're still dying. I'll go to any lengths to prevent that. I won't lie to an alcoholic. You won't hear me tell a new person, keep coming back, it gets better. I laughed. You know, we'll mess with a new guy's head. The gentleman had 4 days, right? Can you imagine what he's saying to himself? If he's never been around AA, he's saying, wait a minute, my life is a complete shambles, and they're clapping. What is wrong with these people? He got more claps than the gentleman with 45 years, right? By the way, you new people, don't try and figure out AA. Your hair will turn white like mine did. I'm really only 31. Because everything here is backwards. Come into AA and everything's upside down. You're all concerned about her and the job and yee-dee-dee. And you get a person called a sponsor. To this day, I'm not sure exactly what that person is. But then you go to them and you want to talk about some of this. And they go, oh, no, no, we're going to do the steps. See, that doesn't compute. In the normal world, if you got a problem, you come up, you address the problem, right? But no, not in AA. Well, I want to talk about her. No, we're going to work steps. You know, and or like they say to you, have your sponsor after me, says, I want to talk to you. He doesn't want to talk to you. He sure don't want to listen to you. He has some things he's going to say. You're going to leave. He's going to have corrected some behavior on your part. See? All kinds of stuff. Don used to do this one to me. I'm so grateful for him. In my first meeting with him, I had about 3 years, and the truth was, I was real damaged when I came to you all, and I didn't know what was wrong with me. I didn't know my first step. And what I loved about him is he did not assume that I was an alcoholic just because I was sitting in the room. And he said to me, when I sat down and I said, you know, would you be willing to take me through the steps? He said, yeah. He said, I'll be willing to do that. But he said, let's get clear on a couple things. And I said, okay, what's that? And he said, well, number one, you have nothing I want. So he said, and someone's got to run this, and it's going to be me. So we're going to meet at my house on Tuesday mornings at 6:30 a.m. That does not mean 6:29. That does not mean 6:31. That means 6:30 a.m. And we're going to start in the title page of the big book, and we're going to go through the big book together. And when it gives us instructions, we're going to do it. I thought that was fairly radical at the time. But I was dying internally, and I knew it, and I knew that going to meetings wasn't going to do it anymore. Some of you have been around for a while and had that experience. You know what I'm talking about. You can carry that off for a while. Very little or no step work, just going to meetings. But you see, if I don't get this internal condition treated, and then ultimately if my mind doesn't change, that psychic change, I'm headed down one path. And it isn't going to be fun in the time it takes to get to that drink again. And so I began that journey with him. You know, that circle and that triangle, and he explained I have a threefold illness, and there's three parts of the program to treat the three parts of my illness. And he asked me what I thought was a strange question. He said, why do you think you're an alcoholic? And I started to explain to him the things I did behind drinking, and he stopped me, and he said, that has nothing to do with why you're an alcoholic. Well, I went to treatment, and I've been divorced, yeah. He said, that has nothing to do with why you're an alcoholic. Oh, okay. And then I started talking about the amounts I drank, and he stopped me, and he said, that has nothing to do with why you're an alcoholic. Finally, after about three or four times, he looked at me, and he said, despite the fact you've been around almost 3 years, you don't know why you're an alcoholic, do you? I said, based on where you're coming from, I guess I don't. So he broke it down. He broke down the first step. First 33 pages, Mark, we're going to look at one thing. Do you break out in craving? Do you lose power, choice, and control once you take a drink, period? He was kind enough to also help me look at my drug use. He saw them as being two very, very distinct and very different things. And he believed in the concept of one alcoholic working with another alcoholic. I remember, you know, you start to wake up a little. Think about this. This is how much in denial and delusion I was. There's 33 pages devoted to answering one question. When I take a drink, do I lose control? That's a bit much, don't you think? 33 pages, right? And the reason they have to do it, they come at us in all kinds of ways. Every way you can think of. You know, and there's this idea, you know, you think, well, an alcoholic, he drinks every day, he's under a bridge. Book says, no, no, no. There's people go long periods of time and not take a drink. But that didn't make any difference. When you take a drink, do you lose choice? Do you lose power? Do you lose control over how much? Period. Yeah. I saw that that happened to me almost from the very get-go when I took a drink of alcohol. And every time I go back to the steps, I have to go back and I must revisit that and I must look at that, because I forget over a period of time that when I take a drink, the drink takes me. Those things I told you, those situations which have some humor to them sober, they didn't have a lot of humor then. I didn't want to miss my grandmother's funeral. But I take a drink and the drink takes me, and that is never going to change. And as I got older, that got worse, not better. My last drink lasted a year and a half. I picked up a drink and drank for a year and a half and got struck sober. Struck sober by a power, God, who I didn't believe in. That is the truth. Drank for a year and a half straight behind the phenomenon of craving. I know about that. I looked at that and I said, my God. Then, you know, he asked me a great question, though. He said, I want you to look at something. How long have you known when you take a drink, you lose control? And I realized I'd known that a long time. And then I got into the pages in the book that revolutionized and changed my life and still have a huge impact on me today, and that's pages 23 to 43. And I look at this every time I go back through the steps, and that's called the obsession of the mind. And here's the easiest way I know how to say this. I will commit the most insane act of my life from a place called sobriety. And that is that if you experience a phenomenon called craving and you do the things you do behind alcohol that I do, the most insane act I could ever do is be separated from alcohol and do that again. And when I say that those were the most revolutionary pages in the book for me, here's why they were revolutionary. When I realized that at my very best, with all the reasons in the world to never take a drink again, I have a mind at certain times that will take me back to a drink, and there's nothing I can do about it, I became a seeker of power. A seeker of power. You all called it God. I like power. I still remember that day. I'm looking at him. And I said, my God, at my very best, doesn't matter how long I'm sober, if I'm not in fit spiritual condition, I have a mind that can take me back to a drink. And if I'm not hooked up with this power, that can happen to me. Is that what this book is saying? He goes, yeah. I said, well, that's not exciting news. He said, we have a solution. Oh, okay. We have a solution. Power, conscious contact, fit spiritual condition. See, I got that. You know, these people that I've worked with before that tell me they're struggling with God, I don't believe that. I believe that anyone struggling with the God issues never had a first step experience. I'm a Norwegian and alcoholic, but I'm not a fool. When I saw my need for power, I'd have done anything. And I didn't care what you called it. If Jesus would have done that, I'd have been there. I didn't care. I didn't care if it was Buddha. I didn't care what the name was. I was interested in the power behind the name. You get that? The power behind the name. I've been saying the names for years, but I'd never tapped into the power behind the name. I became a secret power. Once more, I at certain times have no effective mental defense against the first drink. Wow. Then look at that thing called the spirituality. You know, it's a valid question. If people have some time sober and they relapse, there's some great questions in there about what is that about? Big Book uses a phraseology as you start to get ready to do your four step, something they call the spiritual malady. And it makes a very profound statement. It says, when the spiritual malady is overcoming me, I straighten out mentally. That showed me there's a connection between this thing called the spiritual malady and whether I drink or not. Whether the obsession of the mind is removed. What's the spiritual malady? The bedevilments are a great description of it. And my experience is, I don't care how long you are away from a drink, you're going to experience this at some time or another. Why? Because we're humans. Having trouble in personal relationship. Any of you got any of that going on? Can't control my emotional nature. Probably happened to some of you today, maybe, even. Prey to misery and depression.
On occasion.
Full of fear.
Once in a while.
Can't seem to be a real help to others. Can't make a living. restless, irritable, discontent. Those are great words to describe what I think the big book calls a spiritual malady. Who wouldn't drink if that's all the stuff you got going on? See, I drink to treat that condition, which is why I think the big book says, Mark, when your spiritual malady is overcoming you, you straighten out mentally and physically. That led me to another great question. How do we treat the spiritual malady? We're going to work the rest of the steps. Good. Let's go. Second step became easy based on my first step experience. It does every time through. I'm not that far away from taking a look at the second step again, and I get excited every time I do it, and here's why. It's because there's no end to God. What I'm going to bring to the second step this time is all the experiences I have in my memory banks right up to now. Is there more? Are there dimensions of joy, wonder, love, service, peace, serenity, compassion that I know nothing about? Yes. Yes, beyond my wildest dreams. Am I willing to go for it? Yeah. See, I told you, power. Power, the power of God in my life. Let God demonstrate through me, see what God can do. Yeah, that becomes the second step. Do I believe there's a power greater than myself that can take me past here? Here, this block of knowledge and experience, which is the noose around my neck. You all watched the countdown tonight. Did you notice from about 15 years up, you didn't see a whole lot of people? Did you notice that? What do you think that is? Do you think they're just busy tonight? That is not my experience. My experience is a lot of them are busy drinking. So you cannot live off an old experience. Don, God, I remember it was 3 years ago. He read inventory to me. See, he taught me that thing too. You better be able to read inventory to men you sponsor. See, always be an example. Read inventory to them. Let them see who you are. Right at the day you die, you know, you're going to be having this human experience. So you're going to have some things that happen with that. You're going to get resentful and angry. You're going to get afraid. Don't ever be afraid to show that. Stay current with your work. Share it. Share it with the men that you work with, see? That spirituality, this power, is there more? Yeah, I absolutely know there's more. Dimensions I get to experience I know nothing about. Who doesn't want to go for that, right? Promise, the second step is all I got to do is be willing to seek the power. Am I willing to seek through a course of action, 3 through 9? Yeah, why? My first step. I don't ever want to pick up a drink of whiskey again. It is not okay. I love my life. I love every phase of my life. I love the people in my life. I love everything about my life. So I'm willing to go for it. Again, step off into the abyss of the third step. Am I convinced my life run of my will cannot and will not work? 23 plus years sober. Am I convinced my life today ran on my self-will cannot and will not work? Am I? Can you sit with that? To that requirement in the third step. Because if I'm not convinced that my life run on my will, drunk or sober, cannot or will not work, there's no sense going any further. I tell people when they get to that point, if you're not convinced, run your life on your will a little bit longer and see how that worked out for you. Okay. See, I don't know about the rest of you. There's a phraseology I heard once that summed me up. It's called Zorba the Buddha. I lived the life of Zorba. I ran it out as far as I could, and looking at most of you, you did too. We crammed about 6 years, or 6 lifetimes, into that window. And you know what my experience is? It's over. Now it's this Buddha, this spiritual life. If you don't, and it's like I remember saying to Don with that, well, I don't like that. He said, I don't care. What is your experience? See? See, I'm such a pig with everything that God gave me 100 years. He said, I'll tell you what. I'm going to give your body to live 100 years. I'm going to let you drink this much alcohol. I used mine up by the time I was 36. I did the same thing with lying. Being selfish, being self-centered, thinking of me. I burned that shit all up by the time I'm 36 years old. So now the rest of my life I got to be spiritual. So do you. People say to me, well, do you like doing the spiritual disciplines? Most of the time, some of the time, no! Who wants to get up in the first thing and, oh, God, help me and help these people and pray for this thing? You know,
open it up, you know. Upon awaking, we consider our plans for the day before we begin.
Wouldn't you just like to just every once in a while say, oh, hell with it, right? No, I don't like doing that every day. Setting the timer and you got the chatter of a thousand monkeys trying to be spiritual, right? Wait. Y'all know what I mean, right? Those are great mornings, aren't they? Oh, I tell people I'm at home with my cats, Hobo and Mimi, and my plants. I do great. But some mornings, as soon as I open that door and I walk out and get in my car, it's trouble. It shit goes that way sometimes. But why do I do it? Because I need you to stay in fit spiritual condition. That's why. It has nothing to do with whether I like it. You know, I like the effect produced by the strict spiritual disciplines of the 10th and 11th step, which catapults me into being a service in 12. So I make that third step decision, right? Think about this decision. Amazing decision. I offer myself to God to build with me, and God, you do with me as you want. Whoa. Over the years that I have been sober, that has happened, and I forgot what I said to God in the third step and whined about it. See? You build with me and you do with me as you want. Ugh. Okay. Relieve me of the bondage of self. See? Mark's tied to Mark. That is not a good thing. See? Relieve me of the bondage of self so I can better do thy will. Take away my selfishness, self-centeredness. Earlier the book says, above everything, Mark, you better be rid of your selfishness, which is probably why in the 12th step it says, when all else fails, Mark, go work with another alcoholic. At 9.5 years sober, my mind drive me nuts, and I wound up in a nut house in Houston, Texas. Those of you who aren't working with meditation, just think about that one a little while. And I may be wrong, but from the day I got out of that nut house to this day, I'll bet you that I, in the course of a day, will talk to 1 to 5 drunks about recovery from alcoholism. I don't ever desire to go back to that place again. Ever. Do that third step prayer and I write those inventories, resentment inventory, 4 columns. Column 1, who I'm resentful at. Column 2, why. Third column, what's affected, 7 areas. Then the bridge to the fourth column, disregarding the first 3. Where am I selfish, self-seeking, dishonest, or afraid? Get to see how my ego operates in the world. Fear inventory. List of my fears. Why do I have the fears? Centers me completely into one reason and one reason only. Self-reliance. And if I am in a self-reliance, it's because I believe there is no God. I'll give you all a fun exercise if you want to know your current agnosticism. People with time, every time I do this in bristle. Put my name in column 1. If you bristle. If you want to know your current agnosticism, make a list of what you're afraid of. And what's on that list of what you're afraid of? There is no God in those areas of your life. That is my experience. Self-reliance is always about there is no God. I tell you, I'll never forget the day. This was epiphany for me. I realized one day my ego traps me by convincing me that because I tell you I believe in God, I do. What I finally realized, if I want to know where I'm at with that, what's going on in my heart? Where am I with these things? Men of faith have courage. They trust their God. Do you? Do I? Do I? When it's tough. You know, last 2 years, it's not lots of death. You know? That ex-wife, she's a wonderful woman. I loved her a lot. Been divorced a long time. Doesn't change the fact. I talked to her 2 days before she put a shotgun in her mouth. Everything was fine. You have a lot of feelings behind that guilt. Right? Men of faith have courage. They trust their God. Can I trust? Yes. You know, you live long enough, you go through all kinds of things. Everything you love around you dies. Businesses change. Money comes and goes. Can you trust God? Yeah. Yeah. Doesn't mean you have to like it. Right? Didn't mean I have to like it. Did men of faith have courage? They trust their God. Do you trust God? Yes. Yes. Absolutely. Absolutely. Write the sex inventory. Get done with that. Read that inventory. I like to do multiple fifth steps. I like to read my inventory to 2, 3, 4 different people. I don't know about the rest of you. Maybe it's just me. My ego is very defensive by nature. Big Frank taught me this. My ego is mysterious and powerful to me as God Himself as far as I'm concerned, and I cannot defeat my ego. Big Book says it another way. Only God can remove her self-will has you blocked off from God. I do multiple fifth steps because it's a tremendous ego reduction procedure that I learned over the years. Big Book says read your inventory to person or persons. It's a fabulous thing. Step 6, identify the character defects that my ego uses to run the show, to play God. Step 7, I take that to God. Take all of me, good and bad. Right? 8, I make a list of all the persons that I've harmed. 9, I go sit across from them. I call them. I got to do whatever I got to do. Clean that up. See, my sense was the extent to which I had furnished amends was the extent to which I felt separated from you. It's a wonderful feeling to have made all the amends that are in your conscious state of awareness. That's a nice thing. So you can walk through the world a free man. I used to. Some of you can relate to this if you have experience with amends. You first started making amends, you walk into a room you still feel separate from. And then you keep plowing through amends, and then all of a sudden you start to feel more a part of. And you start to see that connection all of a sudden. And then the strict disciplines of 10 and 11. Big Frank helped me more with steps 10 and 11 than any man. I didn't realize this. The 10th and 11th step is new language. It's called language of the spirit. It's not designed to reach my cognitive brain. It's designed to speak to an awakened spirit. He did a talk one time in the 10th and 11th step. Blew the top of my head off. I realized I didn't know anything about the 10th and 11th step. 2 pages in the 10th step. I could practice the rest of my life on the 10th step tools. Sunlight of the Spirit. Enter the world of the Spirit. What does that mean? Why don't we talk about that more in meetings? You want to jack up a meeting, you know, when they say, anybody have a topic? Here's a topic. Yes, share your experience with having entered the sunlight or the world of the Spirit. Or the other is another neat one in the 10th step. It says, I have a new sixth sense. Another topic. Share your experience with what working with your sixth sense. Incredible stuff in there. Watch, pause, ask, turn. Vision, intent, line of the will. Boom. Start your day here. Fear. God, remove it. Boom. Back. Go from one event to the other. God, shift my consciousness here. Boom. Line of the will. 4 through 9, die the death of self, line of the will. That's all the 10th step is. Incredible practices. You can do the rest of your life. Take little 3x5 cards, put them in your mirror, put them in your car. Take the word watch. I worked for 6 months with the word watch. Sound asleep to how I was. Watch. Took 6 months. Take the word ask, ask. Turn. Turn what? Turn away from yourself. Started working with vision, writing out my vision. I do this the first of every year. I call it a vision book. What I want to co-create with God, and I write that out every single month. All of it. Part of my morning prayer, reading it, sourcing it, watching it manifest right in front of me. The third step, be an agent for God. Let God demonstrate through you what God can do. 11th step, meditation. Sit with the Father. Sit with the oneness. Breath. Focus. Lose your identity with the mind. Know that all is well. Peace. Inner calm. I started meditating, a daily meditation life in 1991. Changed my life. Woke me up. Sleep, dreaming I was awake most of my life. Then a whole chapter about what happens when you walk out your door. How to take an awakened spirit out into the world. Going to Starbucks. I know everyone by their first name. I do everything I can to brighten up their day. Hi, how are you? I know more about Doug than Doug knows about me. I should. I have an awakened spirit. I care. How are you, Doug? Tell me about you. Tell me what's going on with you. Why? Because this work should eliminate me. And if I'm gone, all that's left is Doug. My God, no wonder in the 12th step, when all else fails, work with another alcoholic. I don't know about the rest of you, but it is such a delight to get away from Mark for a while. See, when I learned that, I told this to someone. I never do anything without a selfish motive unless it's by mistake. When I finally realized that I got free of me by working with others, that's one of the reasons I catapulted myself into working with others. I'm sure other people might have thought other things about why I was doing that, but I was clear on why I was doing that. Because when I'm sitting here talking with Doug and I care about Doug, then I don't exist, and there's some peace in that, tremendous peace in that. Working with men, sponsorship. What an incredible deal. What a gift. You know? Getting an opportunity to sit across from them and watch them grow, see how much they help me. I love this program. I was sitting here last night and I was just thinking, I don't know where I'd be without the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I just really don't. And I do a lot of other stuff with the 11th step, but from now the day that I die, the heart and soul of everything I do is the 12 steps and the big book and this fellowship and being of service. And I will do that until the day I die. And the reason I will do that is because of what was given to me as a result of coming to you. AA's taught me how to be a man. AA's taught me how to be financially sane. To have integrity. Do I make mistakes? Of course I make mistakes. Right up to the day it ends, I'll make mistakes. I can clean that up. I don't know where I'd be without this program. But that's all I got. I love you. Thanks.